So Dustin will continue his lectures from last week, and this time he will tell us, if you remember what was going wrong last time, is that in this, he will tell you better than I can, but he was discussing how this probability distribution and their updates tend not to, like the usual algorithm doesn't work well if you take, instead of your variables, some linear combinations of those variables. And so things get skewed in weird ways. So today he will tell us of a different algorithm that actually fixes that problem. So that's quite interesting, I find. So Dustin, please, we can start. And afterwards, of course, there will be the tutorial where we put this into practice.
OK, great. Check. OK, good. So thanks for coming. obviously, kind of a small group today. There's not quite one mic per person, but we're pretty close. So please feel free to step in with questions. I don't mind being totally derailed. It's totally fine. So it's bad when even the conference organizer splits, right? So basically, as Aldo said, I was trying to make the connection to the theme of the school of symmetries by saying basically that the classic Markov chain Monte Carlo algorithm, Tropless-Hastings, kind of lacks an invariance to affine transformations. So kind of isotropic state spaces are easy, but like correlated state spaces are hard, and those only differ by an affine transformation. So it's like kind of frustrating that you have this really powerful algorithm, but it's not affine invariant. Today I wanted to tell you basically about this new class of algorithms that really caught on in astronomy, at least, and how they kind of that by gaining this affine invariance, they kind of gain a lot of other powers, and it's kind of it makes them much easier to use in practice, and as well as having a couple of side advantages that are also really beneficial. Okay, so kind of to recap from last week, the general class of like Markov chain Monte Carlo algorithms like lets you draw samples from a probability distribution. When you can numerically evaluate that probability distribution, but you probably don't have like an analytic form for it. Like you don't usually have like a description of say what the contours of that space look like, but you can evaluate what they are. You know, given a set of parameters, you can evaluate it, but you don't a priori know the kind of contours of the space or like where the peak of the space is or whatever. Okay. This is used really extensively in data analysis context. In cosmology, it's everywhere. So that sort of every plot is basically something that is the result of running a Markov chain Monte Carlo. And basically in that context, it's used to infer parameters of models that are constrained by the data you have. And I should say, a model in this sense is like a very explicit description. You know, it's a predictive model, usually with like a set of parameters. So by running this analysis, you can kind of constrain the numerical values of those parameters. It doesn't tell you whether the model is good. It doesn't allow you to compare models even, for that matter. But it does let you, you know, if you've, once you've assumed a model, it lets you narrow in on which part of the parameter space is useful. Okay, so this is kind of usually used in a Bayesian context. So then the probability function that we're feeding to Markov chain Monte Carlo is the posterior probability function. Right? So this is the prior times likelihood, or at least is proportional to that. There's a really troublesome scale, like a normalization factor that in this context we get to ignore, but in model comparison settings you don't get to ignore, and it makes life much more difficult. But this is the easy version. Okay, so this, just to kind of maybe jog your memory, I don't know, it's been a busy week, I guess. But the example I gave was from this Perlmutter et al. 1999 paper where they were looking at supernovae, and basically by adjusting the ingredients in their model of the universe, they could adjust this curve that says how faint supernovae get with respect to distance or with respect to redshift. And then by basically each different setting of how many, what the ingredients of the universe are, give you a different curve. And some of those disagree with the data, and some of them mildly agree with the data, and some of them agree well with the data, and so on. And that lets you narrow down in the parameter space which parameters are consistent with the data. So that gives you these like blue contours on the right-hand side where the two axes are the are two of the parameters in this parameterization. So how much, what the ingredients of the universe are. And yeah, so basically by running a Markov chain Monte Carlo, they're able to come up with these contours that say what ingredient, what kinds of universes are consistent with that data set. Okay. And then, so the other thing I kind of pointed out was this classic Markov chain Monte Carlo algorithm called Metropolis-Hastings. Basically works by moving, simulating a particle moving around in the state space, or the model parameter space, those sort of mean the thing, same thing. And and that basically operates by randomly proposing to move around, move to a different point in the state space, and these randomly drawn proposed jumps get evaluated by evaluating the probability function at that new place, comparing it to where you were, and then accepting or not accepting that jump according to an acceptance rule. And if you tune the acceptance rule, or like if you choose the acceptance rule right, then in the limit of infinite time, you correctly draw samples from, you correctly walk around the state space and spend time proportional to the height of the probability there. Especially in the lab session, hopefully, a difficulty we saw was that there's a place in the code, you know, where you have to sort of propose, where you have to describe what that those proposed steps look like. And it turns out that as the dimensionality of the problem grows bigger, you have to set more and more of these parameters, and it just becomes a real pain to do in practice. So in order to get it to work kind of efficiently, you have to go to a fair bit of effort. Okay, right, so then the results, once we did sort of mess around with the parameters a bit and get it to sample correctly, was something like this. So on the top, I'm showing where this particle went in that state space. And in the bottom left, like a 2D histogram of that. So this was like, this was an example, this was from the lab session, so this was fitting a straight line to a scatter, you know, a data set. So different slope and intercept values were consistent with that data set to within some, you know, to within some limits, but they were really correlated because if you want to, if you increase the slope a bit, you have to decrease the intercept to still make it go through all the data points. Yeah, so this is all just trying to maybe jog your memory and reset up the context a bit. So yeah, one of the kind of main issues in practice is this problem of setting the step sizes, and we saw that if you are in a, I always think of these as like landscapes, so or as like terrains. So these are contours of probability. And in a setting like this, I think of this as being like a mountain that has sort of a ridgeline. And if you if you don't set all, like try to set the parameters carefully to propose jumps that are aligned with the ridge line, then a lot of the jumps propose to like jump off, jump from on the ridge line to like jump off the mountain. And those all get rejected. So you can like spend a lot of time proposing jumping places that aren't going to be reasonable places to go. Whereas if you make the step sizes really small, then they're kind of easy and timid steps to make, but it takes a long time to get from one part of the one end of the parameter space to another. So in both of those cases, it can just take you a long time to explore the state space. So the solution is to try to, you know, sculpt that proposal distribution so it's aligned with what the landscape looks like. But that just means you have to set this, you know, d squared, order d squared parameters. And that's no fun as the number of parameters goes up. And, you know, Dan Forman-Mackey's plot of this is like, more parameters is scientific awesomeness, but then that makes your life hard with Markov chain Monte Carlo. And today we're going to try to show how to get down to the orange line of how things should be. Okay, that was a long setup for an hour lecture, but anyway, so and I should say, you know, Dan Forman-Mackey, I think there's like, we're not that much different in age, but there's like a generational split where he just has some like jokes that I don't get. But one of the jokes in this talk is everybody's picture has mustaches on them. I don't know if it's a tribute to the glorious mustache of Andrei Markov or something else, but don't exactly get it. This kind of innovation, I guess, came out. It's actually a pretty recent paper. I think it's maybe 2010. These two statisticians, Goodman and Weir, wrote a paper about ensemble samplers with affine invariants. So, well, what does that mean? We'll come to it in a sec. Dan especially kind of cottoned onto this idea and said, this is a great idea, and implemented it in Python and put a lot of effort actually into like coming up with a good implementation, good documentation, you know, a nice Python package basically called MC, which is a clever written name but not a very good spoken name. So I apologize for that. I'm on this paper, but my main contribution is the name. So I'm a little bit sensitive about the fact that it's like, oh, it's so written, it's so clever, but spoken, it's terrible. So sorry about that. And basically this just like really caught on in the astronomy community, at least. And basically, the idea with an ensemble sampler is instead of moving a single particle around the space, you move a whole group of them and a whole ensemble of samples, of walkers or samples. Let's call them walkers, yeah, stick with walkers. You move a whole ensemble of walkers around, and instead of, and then basically they can use their joint distribution in the space to draw better samples, to draw better proposals. So in particular, what the algorithm that Goodman and Weir described is one where every time you want to move a particle, you choose a helper, like choose another particle out of the ensemble, another walker out of the ensemble. And then you look at the vector separating those two points and then choose to walk somewhere, like choose to jump somewhere along that line. And then basically if you, what they proposed is this distribution kind of where they wanted it Yeah, so what they propose is like one where you can jump sort of halfway toward the other, toward the helper, or two times further away from where you are from the helper, and scaled in such a way that those jumps are symmetric. It's nice to have it be instead of just being like a linear, you could imagine it being just between a half and one and a half and scaling it with a flat distribution. But if you kind of make it geometric like that, it lets you expand out or contract quickly, which is kind of a nice feature as well. So, but anyway, with this, with that distribution, there's kind of a funny proposal. The acceptance rule looks a little bit weird, but basically, I didn't actually tell you what Z in this is, but Z is that fraction between a half and two. So it's like the distance along that vector separating them. And then it's oddly raised to the d minus one power, which seems a little bit weird, but where d is the dimensionality of the space. I don't want to really dwell on it too much, but I think of that d minus one factor as somehow being like related to the fact that it's like it's sort of counting the volume of a shell that you're jumping into. I don't really have a good kind of intuitive feel for, or like intuitive explanation of why the d minus one exponentiation comes in. But anyway, it satisfies detailed balance is kind of the mathematical explanation for it. But I'm not gonna dwell on that too much, but so, one of the nice features of this is that if you initialize the walkers in a little ball far from the peak, they can still find their way there pretty quickly. Again, because they can sort of do this expansion by a factor of up to two each step, they can pretty quickly figure out sort of where the good place is and get there fairly quickly. So the burn-in phase tends to be pretty quick. I'll step you through a few steps of what happens if I initialize them like this. And now I have drawn the contours and, you know, the contours continue going down, you know, so. But it makes the plot really messy if I draw all the contours. So I guess it's just, I should point out that, you know, even if you start them down there, they still have a very clear idea of where the gradient is. So at each step, you know, each of those walkers is going to select one of its peers as a helper and then sample according to the line connecting them. So for basically anyone where the helper is on this side, on the uphill side, then all of the proposals are toward the downhill side and that will get rejected. So about half of the steps about half the proposals will get outright rejected. And then if the helper's on the downhill side, then about half of the proposals still will get rejected, but the other remaining half of them will be in the uphill direction. So I guess about a quarter, you expect if you're on a really steep incline, a quarter of the steps will go up. And then sort of once they start to go up, I think if we step through it, we'll see kind of some of the points go in the vanguard, and then any other those tend to kind of pull the others along with them. So this is 20 steps, and they've pretty much found the peak, and then by sort of 25, they're getting there. The last stragglers are making their way up. And then sort of by 30 there, or 35, they've basically spread out across this terrain. So it's pretty neat. And then from this point forward, you can think of, you know, they're spread out along the terrain, and they're sampling basically from their own distribution. So they end up, you know, basically making proposal distributions, making proposals to moves that are pretty reasonable. And the nice thing is we didn't have to set any parameters at all for this. I have another version of just the first couple of steps where I'm also drawing in red, the proposed moves that were proposed but rejected. So you can see that there's like, in general, we'll see a bunch on the kind of downhill side where some of the proposals were to jump down there, but were rejected. And I think I only have 5 or 6 steps from that. Okay, go ahead.
In this whole run, the Z is constant. You fix one, something between 0.5 and 2, and that remains constant throughout the run.
Oh, sorry, yeah. The Z is drawn, is sampled for each update, for each move. So some of the moves are to move between toward the helper, and some of them are to move away from the helper. Sorry, it's not clear about that. Okay, I'm actually gonna.
Hi, I'm sorry, I didn't get how the walkers get the information for the position of the other walkers. So each walker is connected like. Does it have a pair, or is it like updated every time? And is it only one helper that it has, or can you do it with like 2 helpers and kind of move 3 of them together?
Yeah, good. So in the vanilla version of the algorithm, it's just a single helper they know about. do a digression for a sec, or in a minute. One thing you have to be careful about with this algorithm is that you have to have the number of walkers be large enough. You could imagine that if you were So say you had a 3-dimensional state space and you only had 3 walkers, then, you know, if I'm one of them, then they're each out in some direction. And that means there are only 2 vector directions I can move in. So that's then not even enough to span the space, right? So then those walkers would only be able to walk in a plane within that 3-dimensional space. So, but by drawing, as long as you have sort of, I think the typical advice is like at least twice as many walkers as number of dimensions, then you sort of have enough to span the space and not get like stuck in subspaces. Basically at each step, they just choose a single other point to be a walker. But you could imagine choosing like multiple of them and then sampling from a plane. Is that okay? Yeah. So one big reason this caught on is the fact that you don't have to set these proposal distributions or proposal sizes, like step sizes. And another big reason this caught on is the fact that you can parallelize it really easily. So it's like a little bit technical, but basically if you split the points in 2, then if you hold one set fixed, those are going to be the helpers. And so from the first set, each of those is going to randomly draw a helper and then do that randomly propose a jump and then evaluate that jump and decide whether to go there or not. It turns out that you can do that whole decision in parallel for all of the walkers, as long as you hold the other set, the helper set, fixed. So you can run all of those in parallel on multiple cores on a CPU. and then they can switch places. So you hold the first set fixed while the helpers then are not the helpers, and the other set is the helpers, and then resample that set. So by alternating these two sets in parallel, you can make really efficient use of multi-core CPUs. And those were just starting to kind of, the MC package sort of paper came out around 10 years ago. So multi-core CPUs were really starting to catch on, and people were faced with the trouble of like, oh, how do we actually use these efficiently? So that side effect that you can do it in parallel without thinking about it, without doing any extra work, was huge. So it's one of the reasons it really caught on. Okay. I totally blew the timing last time, and it looks like I'm also gonna blow the timing this time by being too short. So if you have any questions, you can totally feel free to ask them. Otherwise, I'm going to just start speaking slowly. Okay, so a remaining issue is multimodal distributions. So a kind of, you can, if you imagine having a set of walkers spread out in a terrain that has two peaks, then a lot of the time you're going to draw a helper that's on the other peak. Excuse me. And then that proposal distribution, like, some of them are going to be reasonable, but it's going to be, you should either stick in your same peak, or you should sort of make a large leap to either side of your peak. Like, jumping to the other peak is really not an option. So which means basically that within each peak, if you draw your helper from the same peak, then it's fine, you make a reasonable proposal, and they kind of reasonably explore those. But jumps between the peaks are really difficult to do, because basically it has to come up with a large enough jump that still gets accepted, that's probably in a poor space between the peaks, and then it sort of has to make another jump into the peak. So it's really difficult for points to migrate between the peaks, which means that, say you manage to randomly lay down a few in each peak, it's hard to then have them like equilibrate and reach the right relative heights. That makes sense. So this is kind of an issue that we saw with Metropolis Hastings. It's also a problem because to get from one peak to another, you basically have to propose taking some jumps that are all downhill until you get to an upward gradient again. So it's kind of also difficult to migrate between peaks. In the original version of, or the the default step in MC is this proposal, and so it has a lot of trouble moving in multimodal distributions. But then one of the things that was kind of added to the code as kind of popularity took off and people got interested and started making some of these criticisms and so on was this realization basically that you can mix in different kinds of moves. You can I'm going to go back for a sec. This proposal, the select a helper and then sample according to that curve, is called the stretch move, because it can basically stretch out along the direction that the points are distributed in. You can mix that stretch move with other moves. So, and then as long as each one satisfies detailed balance, it's fine. So you can mix in Metropolis Hastings moves, or a nice option for multimodal distributions is this move called the differential evolution, or DE move. And it's kind of cool. I don't have a nice picture of it. Instead of selecting a single helper, it selects two helpers and then uses the vector difference between those two as a proposal. So if I'm point A and I've selected points B and C as my helpers, then I'm going to look at the difference between them and take that difference and add it to my own position and propose jumping in that same relative position, in that same relative direction. So that works nicely for multimodal distributions, because basically if you draw helpers from different modes, then their vector difference is basically a proposal to jump between modes. And as long as one of them was from, like the right one was from the mode that I'm in, then it's basically a proposal to jump to the other mode. Does that make sense? I know I don't have I should have a proper illustration of that. But, you know, if I'm like the point on the furthest left, and I happen to draw, say, the two that are indicated there as my two helpers, then especially, well, okay, sorry, if I draw them in as helpers A and B, then B minus A is a good proposal, because it basically would jump me from the furthest left to kind of the shoulder of the second mode. If they're selected in the other direction, then it proposes that I jump way off that direction, which is a terrible idea. There's at least some kind of pretty finite, like reasonably large chance that there's a proposal to jump between modes. And because, basically for any of the points in this mode, that vector difference between the modes is probably going to be a pretty reasonable jump into some reasonable place in the other mode. Proposal distribution seems to kind of work pretty well for that situation. It helps to balance the heights of the two peaks. So then basically just by mixing in a fraction of these DE moves with regular stretch moves, you get this ability to kind of balance the peaks as well as draw good samples from each of the peaks individually. So it's kind of cool. I'm not really sure in practice how well it works if you have like many, many peaks, but then like that's kind of a difficult world no matter what you do. Okay. Timing is terrible. In total, the two lectures came out to like the perfect duration, but the split was not right. I guess what I wanted to say is this traditional Metropolis Hastings has this lack of affine invariance, and that makes you sensitive to rescalings of the data space. So there's like these tuning parameters that change for each specific probability function you want to deal with. Whereas an ensemble sampler, like MC, uses the distribution of the walkers themselves to kind of achieve affine invariance. And which both makes it much easier to use and makes the sampling faster, and then has this huge side effect that it's like basically trivially parallelizable. And honestly, that's probably like one of the biggest reasons it caught on. And then the multimodal distributions, you know, are still hard, but there's this at least one kind of move that can help. And then I guess the main thing I wanted you to pull out of these lectures was that MCMC isn't scary. Yeah. Oh, a question? Oh, yeah, right. Mike, thank you. Good.
So, yes, is it obvious that choosing distribution for walkers result in a fine invariance? Or in that, and I missed
it? Yeah, good. I don't know if it's not totally obvious, but if I took, so let me go back to the example. Let me go like just midway back in there when they're running around. I guess the idea is that if you did take this whole state space and apply an affine invariance to it, like say to make it spherical, then what would those guys would get scrunched this way, so they'd get scrunched that way, right? If you ran with the same sequence of random numbers, then they would always select the same helper, right? And they'd always select the same distance along that line to sample from. So the proposed place to jump would be the same, right? Because it's all of that is affine. Like those are all like linear things, right? It's like choosing a choosing the helper, and then the line would also scale affinely. So then your proposed place to jump in the rescaled place would be in the rescaled space would be the same.
But the distance between two things is changing, right? When
Right. Their distance in the space would change, but their fraction along the line would scale in the right way. So you'd still propose to jump to the same place in the state space. If that does that make sense? It's like, I guess the.
If we have last time, what helped me a lot was the chart or something like that.
Oh yeah, sure.
You can write.
Sure. Yeah. Since we have like 20 minutes, yeah, we can totally do that. I know there's a pseudocode in the paper that I just had open. So if you could give me 1 minute, I'll try to pull that up. It's probably going to be easier than me trying to write it out by hand.
Also, if it's already there in the
I didn't actually write it out in the tutorial because, oh yeah, there it is. Okay, good. Let me pull it over here and to begin it. For the tutorial, I thought I would not try to make you redo the code just because it's a little bit more involved. It's a little bit terse. Okay, so what this is showing is yeah, maybe I should write it out in maybe I'll draw a picture like of each step. So chalk is here. And so this is showing a single update step. So we want to move each of the walkers, right? So say there. And so we're going to go through each of them in turn. Say we're looking at this one to start. We randomly choose one of the other, one of the rest of them to be the helper. Let's choose, I don't know, this one.
Random number generator.
Yeah, that's right. It would randomly choose one of the remaining, n minus one, or k minus one walkers. To be its helper. Um, the number u from a uniform distribution between 0 and 1. And then, see if I remember this correctly, you can scale that into, how does it go? I think it's u plus 1 squared over 2 gives you that shape of being distributed along this line from 1/2 to 2. So this would be, I think that's how it's, I think that work is how it works. So that gives you, so let's say you draw a uniform, let's say the uniform number you draw is 0.4, then this turns into, oh, that's not a good example. What don't we do? Let's see, can we do a quarter? So 1 1/4 squared is, help me, about 1.2 squared, oh boy. Yeah, sure. Okay, about 1. Can we call it divided by 2, so it's about 3/4? So that proposal is then to jump. Sorry, I did that wrong even. We're going to be sampling along that line from here to here. So this would be 1/2, this would be 1, and this would be 2. So if we draw the number, if we happen to draw the uniform number of 1/4, then the proposal is to jump like somewhere in here. If you draw 1, then it's to jump right to the end. If you draw 0, then it's to draw right, jump toward the helper. And then we then have to evaluate the probability at this point. and compare it to the probability where we were there. And then this factor, so that would be, that's about 3/4. So then basically it, let's see, so that means that it has to be a little bit so that the all right, okay, yeah, so that means that if it's if that factor times the ratio of the how good the new place is compared to the old place, if that is 1, then it's always accepted. So, if it's equally if the probability is equally good, then you would still accept it 3/4 of the time. Okay. And then this drawing a random number is about what fraction of the time you accept that move. That if you accept it, then you jump to the new place. Otherwise, you stay where you were, which is the same as the Metropolis Hastings we saw before. There, how's that? A little bit off the cuff, but Okay. Yeah. So, unless there are further questions, I guess I'll we'll call it a day. I'll thank you very much for your time and questions and attention. There is a 15-minute break, and then the lab session in the Bob Room. And the lab session is pretty similar to the one last week. You don't have to have gone to the one last week for it to make sense to come. It's the same sort of setup where I made a notebook. The notebooks are also available on the web if you want to do them on your own time separately. And this one doesn't actually have fill-in. It doesn't have places where you have to write the code, because I felt like there weren't exactly places to do that. But it's more like there are places where you like have to go and play with some parameters and try to make some plots and try to just explore it a little bit on your own, for yourselves. So I I hope that's a useful format. And I'll hope to see you there. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Dustin.